Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to NJSBA's podcast program, Conversations on New Jersey Education, a program designed to bring the educational issues of the day and educational leaders to you as we discuss what's happening in education. And usually it's a New Jersey issue. Today it's going to be more of a national issue, and I'll get to that in a second. But if you want to call in to ask a question later on, you dial 1-347-989-8904 and press 1, and Mike, who's working the switchboard, will take your question, and then we'll put you through. Also, you can register with Blog Talk Radio, and you can join our chat room and ask questions that way. I'll pass them on to our guests. This January, as I think everyone knows, we have a new president, President Donald Trump. And with any new presidency, you have new changes in philosophy, changes in priorities, and education's no different, even though I don't think education, from my view, was the top issue in terms of the presidential race. To those of us in education, it is important, and there will be some change in direction. Joining me is Deborah Rigsby with the National School Board Association. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you. Thanks for having NSBA on your podcast.
Yes, and before I go, most of our listeners are from New Jersey, and they're board members, but they may not be a little bit familiar with National School Board Association. Just tell us briefly who you are and what you do.
Sure. Well, National School Boards Association represents our state associations, including New Jersey State School Boards Association, and we advocate on behalf of all school boards. Our legislative priorities this year include child nutrition, reauthorization of the Career and Technical Education Act, the Carl D. Perkins Career and Technical Education Act, federal education investments such as the Title I grants under the Every Student Succeeds Act, and also supporting the range of public school choice, the choices that our school districts already provide in their curriculum. So this is the agenda, and as you all know, and with New Jersey School Boards Association, our president this year is Kevin Sayak, who is definitely leading this charge. So we've been involved in education policy since the 1940s, when NSBA was formed through the state association. So the mission is to advocate for equity and excellence in public education.
All right. Before we get into the issues, and we'll be going through choice, funding, IDEA, ESSA, and I'll probably remind you, for a lot of our listeners, especially if I was just using acronyms, we'll say what they mean. But there's new players. Who are the important players in terms of the Congress that our members should be aware of? And what committees do they head?
Sure. So for education, definitely the House and Senate Education Committees. It's the House Committee on Education and the Workforce, and in this Congress, this is chaired by Congresswoman Virginia Fox of North Carolina, and the ranking member, our senior Democratic member on that committee, is Representative Bobby Scott of Virginia. In the Senate, it is Senator Lamar Alexander, and many of you may know that or remember that he is a former Secretary of Education himself. And he heads the Senate Education Committee. It's the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee as well. And the ranking member is Senator Patty Murray of Washington, who happens to be a former school board member. Also, in terms of committees that are over the budget and funding for education programs, we have the House and Senate Budget Committees and also the Appropriations Committees. Appropriations Committees are the committees that once the budget is established, the House and Senate appropriators then work to, within the budgetary guidelines, to allocate specific levels of funding or areas of funding to education programs. And this is the range from pre-K programs such as Head Start to a higher education. And so, of course, all of our programs fall within that rubric there. Other committees in Congress are the House and Senate Commerce Committees, Energy and Commerce Committees. They have a role in education technology, and they oversee the E-Rate program, which a number of school board members are aware of. This E-Rate program provides about $3.9 billion in subsidies to our school districts and libraries for internet access, for broadband, and other services that connect our classrooms and students to the internet and online learning and distance learning opportunities. So this is key as well.
And I, obviously, I think most people know the other key player is the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos. And I don't think we need to go through, you know, she got confirmed by one vote. I think in general the concern from many in the education community was she's a strong advocate for vouchers and school choice, and her background in the other areas wasn't as strong. I think today, this week, she was just given not a new direction, but she was given an executive order to deal with. Could you explain what that executive order is a little bit?
Sure, I will. It really helps to underscore one of the overarching priorities that our school board members and state associations have long championed, which is local governance. And this sort of reiterates the theme of the Every Student Succeeds Act and what the general principles were there when Congress was going through the process of writing the law and vetting it and negotiating it. And also, before we get into the details of the executive order that was announced on yesterday, I also want to add that with the House Appropriations Committee, one of the members of your congressional delegation in New Jersey is the chairman of the House Appropriations mm-hmm. Committee, and that is Representative Rodney Frelinghausen. So he is definitely a key player when it comes to education policy and the resources and appropriations to fund the key programs. Back to the executive order, and I'm actually looking at it now. It's titled the Presidential Executive Order on Enforcing Statutory Prohibitions on Federal Control of Education. And it really emphasizes everything on the policy. If anything, based on what we heard from U.S. Department of Education personnel, there's an order to review all of the regulatory policy that the Education Department has promulgated over the last several years. And it is to assure compliance with recently enacted laws such as the Every Student Succeeds Act. And does the policy, one of the measures there is, does the policy, the regulatory policy, protect and preserve state and local control over curricula, programs of instruction, school district administration, schools, and is it consistent with the Every Student Succeeds Act? And then this review not only includes regulations, but also guidance documents as well. Some of our school districts and the chief state school officers of every state, you may not receive regulatory guides, but you also receive guidance documents such as letters from the U.S. Secretary of Education or the Office of Civil Rights within the department. And these are considered Dear Colleague letters or guidance. And so these are areas as well that the U.S. Department of Education will be reviewing. And it's to ensure and really preserve state and local control or community ownership of schools. And that's consistent with the overarching priority that NSBA has really advocated for the last several years, and especially during ESSA.
And I'll get into ESSA a little bit more in detail, because as I follow with the Secretary of Education, as I said earlier, one of her big issues and where she made her mark was in school choice issues. And now President Obama himself was a proponent of charter schools. Is there any difference in the that you see at this point in their vision for charter schools?
Well, for one thing, based on what the position our delegate assembly has taken in National School Boards Association is that we support charter schools as long as they are approved by the local school boards. So what we're seeing with the previous administration and this one, it is an effort to promote school choice, but not with those guidelines of authority to the with local school board being the authorizer of a charter school. It could be a state entity or other authorities. So this is one area in where the policy and the ideology is different. Also, in terms of choice, there's been a push for vouchers, and we have seen that with the recent budget blueprint that the president published in March. This was simply a framework, and we're expecting a more detailed budget in May. However, there was one specific area where the president is calling on a $1 billion increase for choice. And it could be that it could be within the guidelines of the Every Student Succeeds Act. There is a section under Title I of that act, and that is the cornerstone of the law, where certain states and school districts can try a pilot project on certain funding to promote school choice and inter and district transfers, et cetera. Or it could simply be a proposal to advance Title I portability that many of you remember through ESSA a year or so ago, or simply a voucher. So that's something that people definitely are discussing and want to see more details about. Also, there was a request to Congress for, I believe, of $250 million for charter school advancement as well. So this is something similar in terms of the allocation proposed for charter schools, but we're seeing that the administration wants to look at a range of choice, including that for choice within private schools.
Okay, I have a couple questions in that area. My understanding was that the budget was actually for public education at the federal level was not going to go up, and probably it was going to be cut. So where would this additional funding for vouchers and charter schools come from if they're not increasing the number?
Well, I think a lot. That's something that we would love to see. We cannot. Everything now is in terms of a forecast or speculative, and what people have sort of targeted as what could be a cut. But we've not seen anything specific, and I do want to stress that. We expect a very detailed budget to be available in May. What we have seen, just based upon the framework from last March, is that the $1 billion could be provided because of a call to eliminate about a $1.14 billion program through 21st Century Community Learning Centers. And this program has been effective for years, and a number of our school districts operate 21st Century Community Learning Centers, as well as districts and communities and county governments throughout the nation. And it's very effective. It provides after-school tutoring, supplemental services that students need to really reinforce the programs of study in school. And it has provided just this range of extended day learning opportunities. So this is something that is of concern. And people have stated that this $1 billion proposal to cut the funding for 21st Century Community Learning Centers would be that offset for the requested increase of $1 billion under Title I for choice.
All right, so that's something that we definitely should be, school districts should be, school board members, and all school districts should be keeping an eye on as to how it's going, where the money might be taken from, if it's taken from anywhere. A couple more points.
Right. And also another area that was listed in the March blueprint was that the funding for the professional development, the training, a training for teachers on how they would handle student records and student data privacy, all of that falls under Title II of the Every Student Succeeds Act, and that is for effective school leaders and teachers. It was formerly called Teacher Quality, and this area of funding is about $2.3 billion, and this goes to our states and school districts for everything for professional development, helping school districts develop programs of study in civics, areas of civics. Also, it would encourage school districts to form a master teacher corps, especially for teachers who have that expertise in the areas of STEM subject areas, science, technology, engineering, and math, and also the arts. So this is a key concern as well. And if you look at the total of the programs that were mentioned for reduction or elimination in the budget request in March, it is significant. So this is something that we have begun to champion already, and I would encourage all school board members from New Jersey to do that as well. A key policymaker here, of course, is Representative Frelinghuysen, who is the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. And members can go to the NSBA website. It's nsba.org and access a number of materials. And I know that you all have done so as well with the New Jersey School Boards Association regarding funding and appropriations and the impact of this for student success and achievement in our schools.
One more thing on school choice. I've heard you talk before, and one of the things that I don't think people realize is you talked about the protections that that parents may have when the student's in a public school, but if they go use a voucher to a private school, there are some rights that and protections that you may not realize are not the same. Could you explain that?
Sure. One example is IDEA. This is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and this law was first enacted in 1975, and this governs educational support to students with disabilities. And a number of students who have curricula, who take the curricula under an individualized education plan. And so this law provides about $14 billion or so dollars each year to our states and school districts to educate students with disabilities. And so oftentimes there has been a call for vouchers under special education. And if a child is using a voucher and they go to a private school, they would no longer be covered with those types of protections under IDEA. So that is the concern in terms of the parental rights. And say, for instance, there's been an article that I could call your attention to. It was in the New York Times recently. It was actually April 11th. And the example was special ed school vouchers may come with hidden costs. And one of those costs are some of the things that have to be weighed out and you really have to be thoughtful about it is the protections there and the rights that students would have and then the loss of that at a private institution under IDEA.
Okay, that's something I don't think most of our people have really thought about. They kind of look at the loss of funding, but the loss of rights, that's something that parents probably should be made aware of and that we should inform them on. I want to move on, though, to you mentioned ESSO, which stands for those who don't know.
The Every Student Succeeds Act. This is the law that Congress enacted in December of 2015, and this reauthorized the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, but most importantly, and perhaps is what is key to a number of your listeners, is that this law replaced the No Child Left Behind Act. We had heard a lot of concerns and about the unintended consequences of NCLB, and so the Every Student Succeeds Act is this new statute that is in place now, and it definitely advances what we discussed earlier, local governance, community ownership of schools, in terms of encouraging states to develop state plans that are ideal for the needs of their respective students. Everything from English language acquisition for students who need that, also for Title I, and then the alignment with programs of study in other areas, such as encouraging apprenticeship programs for students who are in career and technical education studies, and how this law should align with that, the congruencies between these two areas. So this is revamped at K-12 education, and it even includes a component for early education. So that is the Every Student Succeeds Act.
Now, I understand that some of the regulations have been either withdrawn or repealed. Which ones are those, briefly?
Sure. So there were three regulations that were being developed. Only one is in effect, and that was on assessments. These are the tests that our schools administer, the states and school districts administer at the end of the year, the standardized tests that are to measure each student's progress in terms of proficiency in areas such as reading and mathematics and sciences. And so that regulation is effective now. And the two that were in question were the one on accountability. This one was effective. It became effective under the previous administration. However, with the new administration under President Trump, in January there was an order where each agency was to review the most recent regulations and those that were pending to become effective, and to put a hold on their effective date to really see if that was if they were consistent with the goals and the overarching principles of law such as ESSA, similar to the executive order that we discussed from yesterday.
Right.
The third one was on supplement, not supplant. And this one had been controversial in the past simply because it would have changed the rules on how equity and other things would be compared, and also it was really changing what had been a general a statute or policy for years. Supplement, not supplant provisions are part of a law called the General Education Provisions Act, and that is also part of ESSA. And it simply says, and this is not only with education programs, but with other federal programs, any federal grant funds or dollars are to be used in addition to state and local resources for education, for our students and school districts. They cannot be used to replace state and local funding or state and local per pupil allocations. And so the proposal was totally revamping that. There was a lot of concern, and the previous administration actually rescinded that, and they withdrew this proposed regulation the Wednesday before, I guess, the last day of the Wednesday before the inauguration of this year. So that was a relief to a number of states and school districts.
Now, so ESSA, which most is partisan support, I have heard rumors that there were proposals to kind of eliminate ESSA from the Congress. Does that have legs, or is that just it may pass one house, but it may not go anywhere in the other?
Well, what occurred in terms of the regulatory policies such as accountability in Congress, there was a vote actually in the House and Senate to rescind the accountability regs for schools, and so for states and school districts rather, and this was done through the Congressional Review Act, and many people had never heard of this law before because it had only been used once, and so the Congressional Review Act allows Congress to look at a regulatory policy such as accountability And if it is something that overwhelmingly members of Congress disagree with, they have the right to review this. There is, a 60 or 90-day timeline there for the review, and then a vote takes place, and based upon the majority of the vote, the regulation is rescinded. And that is, of course, what happened several weeks ago with the accountability regs. In terms of the Every Student Succeeds Act, this law was really bipartisan, and it represented a great deal of progress made, and especially the bipartisanship in the Senate between Chairman Lamar Alexander and Senator Patty Murray, and also in the House. And we have to say that for school boards, members of Congress were very receptive to the priority on local governance of school districts. And so, as a matter of fact, there was actually language in ESSA that NSBA provided and worked closely with both committees in a bipartisan way. So any type of withdrawal of ESSA, we certainly would not like to see that. And what we've heard and seen is perhaps a closer review in terms of regulatory policy to ensure that the law is implemented in the bipartisan fashion in which it was developed by members of Congress.
All right, let's move to funding. While New Jersey doesn't get a lot of federal funding, we're near the bottom. We do, you know, particularly in some of our larger urban districts, do receive quite a bit. Is the Trump administration, I know they're talking about budget cuts in this area, and we talked about that a little bit more likely. Is that in the Title I area, or this is all speculation at this point?
For now, we have not seen any proposal to eliminate funding under Title I. The only thing we've seen so far is the proposal to add that $1 billion for the specific area of choice. We've not heard heard of any type of discussion about limiting the Title I dollars that exist. And just as a reference, the funding amount that New Jersey state and school districts received for Title I last year in fiscal year 2016 was about $355.4 million. So definitely a key investment in New Jersey schools and students.
While we're on funding, the government, they have to make a decision. You know, there's a threat of a shutdown. You know, how would that affect education one way or the other?
Sure. So Congress has returned this week, and they have another day or so to finalize a funding bill for the remainder of this fiscal year 2017. What occurred, and this is often the case with the transition to a new administration, Congress may not adopt a full-year funding bill for the next fiscal year. And so what occurred is that Congress adopted a funding bill that would fund education programs and other government operations through April 28th. So this Friday, Congress is to pass a bill. It could be a continuing resolution. That's what the measures are called, where education and other programs would be funded through September 30th. Of this year, through the end of fiscal year 2017. And so for education, there is an advantage there. For Title I programs, for Title II, remember that's the teacher quality or teacher effective teacher and school leaders grants, these programs are forward funded or advanced funded. Because of the start of the school year and the difference in the change of the federal fiscal year, which begins October 1st, and the school year begins before that, for years, states and school districts have received what we call advance appropriations. So there is a continuum of funding available, even if there is an unforeseen event such as a temporary federal government shutdown or some sort of challenge that would prevent distribution of funds through a normal schedule. So these programs are covered, with the exception of one program. And this is key because this is about $15 million for a number of school districts in New Jersey, and that is Impact Aid. The Impact Aid program benefits school districts and students, families in New Jersey, where the students whose parents or guardians are enlisted in the armed forces, also for students who reside on tribal trust lands, and uh-huh. for school districts that have a large section of federal property within their jurisdiction. And that's where the school district may not receive the property tax revenues that help pay for educational services. With the federal property, that, of course, is exempt from local and state property taxes. And so what the federal government does is provide the payment to those communities in lieu of the property taxes. And that, of course, helps fund education. So this program is not advance funded. It does not receive advance appropriations for the upcoming school year. So if there were to be some sort of shutdown, the Impact Aid payments would stop until the government would reopen. So that is key for us. And this is an area
where
that
does impact some districts severely.
Yes, yes.
Right?
For
yeah.
many communities, Impact Aid payments and federal funding comprise a significant amount of the budget. So this was several years ago when we were dealing with the issue of sequestration and across-the-board budget cuts, which, by the way, could come up next year, so we have to be vigilant about that. But one of the superintendents from Texas stated that federal funding accounted for about 50% of the school district's budget at that time, and I think that was around fiscal year 2013 or 14. And so this is key. You see where a number of the students receive that the instruction and the assistance from these programs. This is key. So it's definitely something that we want to be addressed, and we've also been advocating for years for Impact Aid to receive those advance appropriations.
I should have asked this before, but on the funding issue, when you talked about additional funding for vouchers, in a state like New Jersey, where we haven't had political support for vouchers, so if a state doesn't approve, the state legislative bodies and the governor don't have a voucher program, what would happen? I mean, would they just lose the funding that might have went in another area completely, or can vouchers still occur?
Well, that is a couple of things. One, we need to also establish this precedent that there's only one federally funded voucher program currently, and that is for the District of Columbia. It's called the DC Opportunity Scholarship Program. And you've even had controversy with members of the city council, the governing board for the District of Columbia, and the representative to Congress for the District of Columbia express significant concerns about this program and about the progress of that program. So there's only one federally funded voucher program. But now within the respective states, we do know where states have voucher programs. However, this would be totally new. If the federal government were to fund this, this would be something that is very new, and we would expect a lot of a statutory language around that. But I do need to stress the position, of course, of NSBA and New Jersey School Boards Association that we are encouraging an advanced dialogue on evidence-based choice options, and really the choice that we support is within our public school districts. We do not believe that public dollars should be expended for a non-public institution. And one area of concern is simply accountability, where there has to be a number of accounting requirements that are adhered to by our public school districts. They don't have to. That isn't the case for non-public institutions. Other areas in terms of student achievement and performance measurements, those are all areas of concern. And in terms of, Ray, I want to digress for a moment here. In terms of how we are presenting this argument to members of Congress, when we talk about school choice, public school districts have been offering choice for several years. And that includes everything from the public magnet schools, the charter schools that are authorized by our local school boards. Some school districts have public military academies as well. These are choice areas. And then for many school districts that may not have these types of programs or special schools, such as the lab schools, there are specific programs of study, special types of advanced courses and curricula, international focus schools as well. I think that's one area in Denver Public Schools. So these are various programs of study that provide choice options to our students, and I definitely want to stress that. But back to the vouchers, we believe that public funds should not be used directly or indirectly through tax credits, through vouchers, or a choice system for education at a non-public institution. Another area in terms of vouchers that we could see some language on is tax reform. This is coming up in Congress, perhaps in the coming weeks, and that's an area where if there are no direct appropriations for this, for vouchers, it could be in the form of a tax credit. So that's another area that we are looking at. And yes.
There's so many other issues I have to get to, so I'm going to try to speed through some. Because you mentioned child, you know, there's a couple things. Child nutrition is one thing, you know, we receive money for the nutrition programs and school lunches and all that. How is there a concern in that area?
We have not seen efforts yet to resume the reauthorization of the Healthy and Hunger-Free Kids Act. This is the current, that's the name of the current child nutrition law. And the committees of jurisdiction are the Senate Agriculture Committee and the House Committee on Education and the Workforce. With the previous administration, you all remember where there were regulations out of the Department of Agriculture on sodium and grain targets, reducing the sodium level in food that is served by our school cafeterias, and also increasing the grain, multi-grain and areas and that sort of thing.
Right, more health-oriented changes.
Exactly. And there was also an effort to try to encourage the in earlier laws, the pilot programs, where their students had an opportunity to even participate in locally grown foods and to encourage that. So the previous reauthorization last year, year before last, it included something that was controversial in the House bill called the Community Eligibility Guidelines. And that would have really affected a number of students who qualify for free and reduced price lunch. And it would have excluded a number of those students that would currently receive some sort of supplement or the free and reduced price lunch under this program. So that was controversial. And we are not sure what the draft legislation could look like coming up, but this is another thing to be aware of. The concern also was trying to meet the budgetary targets for child nutrition in the Senate bill. And the committee had gone back to sort of review the bill because once they had looked at it and were, I guess, ready for committee consideration and Senate floor consideration, that's what occurred in terms of the budgetary parameters of the bill. So this is where we expect the House and Senate to begin again with child nutrition. The key concern for us is to encourage Congress and the new administration to enact a bipartisan CNA bill or child nutrition bill that provides that flexibility and relief for our school districts to administer school meal programs. With the previous administration and the sodium and grain targets, NSBA had been successful in getting a waiver for a number of school districts that needed the additional time to adjust to the new regulations. A key priority here is increasing the reimbursement levels to cover the cost of compliance. The reimbursement for school meals is not as the amount is not as big or the amount that some people would think. So this is where the Department of Agriculture provides our school districts and school food authorities with a portion of the funds that are used for each meal that is provided to students. And then the second priority here is authorizing our school districts to make implementation feasible with federal resources. And again, that's the flexibility for the whole grain content and sodium reduction targets. And then also increasing that stakeholder engagement. Any opportunity where our school boards can be effective in providing comments and guidance to federal agencies in this area to talk about the impact of what proposed regulations would mean to their districts and students is always encouraged, and that's something we welcome when dealing with areas such as child nutrition.
Now, as I've listened to you, there seems to be a couple of themes, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. One, there's not a lot of specifics on the direction. There's hints in areas of school choice, hints on funding cuts, hints on child nutrition, hints we didn't even get to the E-rate. But we don't really have anything specific yet. A major concern, though, is, and probably in all these areas, if you cut the budgets across the board, you can't really implement what you already have now, because it would, I guess, be a little bit difficult if you're doing a 10% cut. I'm just throwing out a number. A 10% cut across and then increasing funding in another area. So that is the concern that people or board should be at least be monitoring to see what becomes more of a reality in terms of proposals. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. What we know now from the blueprint is that in addition to that $2.4 billion target for teacher quality or effective teacher and school leader programs and 21st century community learning centers that provide the after-school services to our students, we know that's about $3.4 billion. And then with other areas, this is significant. You could be looking at a cut of more or around $4 billion within education programs K through 12, and this is significant. But also, I do want to point out that this is a budget request to Congress, and oftentimes what is requested by an administration is not always granted by Congress. So this is where the involvement and engagement with members of Congress and their staff in the development of a budget and also with the appropriations committees regarding the funding levels that are allocated for each program is significant. It's necessary. It's anything but calling members of Congress, sending an email, making sure that you know the name of the staff person who handles or staffs that your member of Congress for if they sit on education committees or the appropriations committee or the House and Senate budget committee. This is crucial. And get to know the staff. Be engaged. Let them know how these programs benefit students. If there has been an increase in your school district's graduation rates and Title I has contributed to that, please note that. This is always helpful. The anecdotal evidence and the real-world examples and success stories are what we need to champion these investments and ensure that they are maximized, especially in the coming years.
All right, we're coming towards the close. I didn't get to a couple of the issues I wanted to get to, like healthcare. So our members should be watching what happens in the healthcare reform because that's a program in and of itself, I think, with the Cadillac tax and Medicaid reimbursements and all that. So I guess, first of all, Deborah, I want to thank you for joining me. And second, I guess your message is stay tuned because this will probably be developing over the rest of the year. And to contact
definitely,
NSBA
definitely.
Or NJSBA. To contact NSBA if they have questions or New Jersey School Board Association, but stay tuned for the next, I guess, 8 months or so, or to see how things develop over the course of this year.
Exactly. And if people would like more information about these priority issues, please go to our website, nsba.org/advocacy. And we have additional information there about ESSA implementation, child nutrition, and federal investments for education programs, as well as other issues.
Okay, Deborah, that brings us to the conclusion. I'd like to thank you for joining me. If anyone has any other questions, she gave you the way to contact NSBA, but you can also reach out to the New Jersey School Board Association. We have a partnership with NSBA, and we will get the information out to you. Thank you, and I hope everyone has a good day.
Thank you.